So welcome back, everyone, to Talking Asset Management with KPMG and our Private Credit Series. This is Pat Brooks, and I'm joined with three of my colleagues today talking about optimizing tax consequences and distressed debt transactions, which is a big mouthful, and it took me a few times to rehearse that before I can actually say it. But anyways, my three colleagues are Yinka Kikoyi, he's an M&A tax partner, Mark Hoffenberg, who's a Washington National tax M&A partner, and Casey Nunez, who's another M&A tax partner. So guys, I'm just going to jump right in. And Yinka, you're the first on the hot seat. When you think about creditors and all they're going through in these type of situations, how are you advising them as they sort of move from maybe distressed into equity in distressed companies?
Thanks, Pat. We've been helping them a lot with tax modeling and tax structuring. And we've found from experience that just a lot of modeling and understanding the different, you know, tax structures could actually make a world of difference from a restructuring perspective. And what we usually come in with is come up with different ideas, understand what the profile is, and structure the transaction in a way that will create value for the company so they can have significant tax deductions or preserve NOLs on a go-forward basis. And we found that coming in early is really helpful as opposed to coming at the tail end. So we try to come in earlier on the process to be able to add the most value in these types of situations. So in a nutshell, helping with tax structuring and helping with tax modeling, I think makes a world of difference and by creating value for our clients.
This is Mark Hoffenberg. I couldn't agree more. What Yinka said is key, because usually if we do come in early, we can identify and put forward a structure that really then governs the way the whole transaction is implemented and structured. And it can make a huge difference to the going forward value of the NOLs and other tax attributes of the company. Generally, when creditors take over a company, if you don't plan it right, A, you end up with limitations on the losses under Section 382 or other limitations. And the cancellation of debt income triggers a reduction in attributes. And our modeling is intended to structure around both of those constraints and keep a lot of those attributes viable for future use by the company.
This isn't like a sales pitch to you all listening. I think this is from experience that we've seen people who probably haven't modeled or haven't really thought about the consequences of how your CODI could reduce tax attributes and really impact things going forward. Is that sort of what we're trying to say?
That's exactly right, Pat. We've seen scenarios where we've come in and the deal has been struck already commercially, and we'll look at the outcome. And just by a couple of tweaks, like converting an entity into a disregarded entity, we've been able to, even keeping the commercial transaction as is, change the tax results significantly. And the go-forward structure has been materially enhanced just by just that one conversion. So it's really important to come early and understand the profile and see if there's tax structuring ideas that you can implement to help enhance the value on a go-forward basis.
There's really two benefits to all of this. The first is it can help mitigate cash tax leakage of the debtor during the creditor's ownership of that company, but it can also maximize the value on exit by the creditor and present to future potential buyers additional tax attribute value that might be beneficial to them.
So we've thrown up the warning sign. Hey, this is what you should do. What are some examples? What are some things that you all have done? Mark, maybe you have a few things that you've done that people could sort of sink their teeth into and really wrap their head around.
One possibility is that the debtor files for bankruptcy protection. And many times the commercial advisors are saying we don't need to go through bankruptcy or it's not critical to get us our debt resolved. But there are some very favorable rules in bankruptcy that can enhance the use of the attributes. So for example, 382L5 is a rule that can take away loss limitations if debt is exchanged for equity. So we sometimes go into bankruptcy precisely to apply for that rule. We do reorganizations where the debt is non-recourse or it's recourse only to a disregard. We can sometimes do reorganizations where the debt is basically exchanged for equity in a new co, and we avoid both COD and taxable gain on the transaction. Sometimes the tax attributes surviving the transaction are really not going to be enough to warrant that as being the most efficient go-forward approach. So we just do a taxable sale is this word that is used, Brunos, referring to an old case where a bankrupt company just structures a deal to sell all of its assets to another company in a taxable transaction, use up attributes before they go away, and get a stepped up basis in all the assets. And we determine that that provides the greatest value. And then the fourth thing I'd add to that menu, among many others, is there are sometimes ways to do that taxable transaction in a way that is internal. We keep the same parent company and the same group, but we do a taxable internal transaction. We get the basis step up, and we also might get worthless stock deductions on stock of companies within the chain that are just incremental tax attributes that can be used in the future as well.
Casey, you and I, and you could, well, actually all of us, but Casey, recently we've been working on a bunch of these things. Mark's throwing out some of the ideas and we're talking about the warning signs, but what are some things that you've actually seen out there, like real life, maybe, I guess we can call them war stories, like that you've been sort of going through?
Yeah, Mark touched on evaluating the potential for asset sales, and oftentimes it's a great answer. And sometimes the debtor has so much in tax attributes like NOL carryforwards and basis that doing that doesn't yield a great answer. We wouldn't want to throw away those attributes. We had worked on one recently where the parties had been coalescing around taking a subsidiary in a consolidated group, the actual debtor, and taking that equity, equitizing at that level. And we quickly realized that if they just take the empty holding company that was the parent to the group, there was a drastically different 382 answer. And something as simple as taking that empty box created huge tax benefits for them going forward. And just to pile on, also by doing that, they were able to maintain a built-in loss in subsidiary stock that they would have thrown away otherwise. And the way the rules work, that created the potential to have recognized built-in losses in excess of the net unrealized built-in loss that is policed by 382. And so we could effectively turn stock basis into an unlimited net operating loss after the ownership change that occurred as part of the transaction.
What that reminds me of, Casey, is that sometimes timing is also key.
Yes.
Because one of the ways you can avoid a limitation on your worthless stock deductions is by recognizing them very early in a tax year. We've intentionally told a company, well, hold off, don't do your restructuring now, wait till January 2nd. And then do your restructuring, and we can allocate 364/365 of your worthless stock deduction to the post-transaction period and escaping limitation.
Yeah, sometimes just waiting a couple of days can make a huge difference, right?
Yeah. That is great. Well, Yinka, I'm going to hit you with one that I didn't even put out there for you beforehand, but we do all these, but we do know that our clients are engaged by some really wonderful law firms. How does all this work? That the accounting firm and the law firm, are they butting heads? How's that working with the two? And what's maybe the best way the two work together?
This is actually a symbiotic relationship with the law firms. It's very complementary in nature. Typically, law firms don't crunch numbers. So we'll come in and crunch numbers, looking at the maybe five potential alternatives. Someone's got to crunch numbers, and we'll typically crunch numbers so we can compare each scenario. And the numbers don't lie. They tell us, okay, if you do this, this is what makes the most sense and yields the least amount of taxes on a go-forward basis. And in addition to even crunching numbers, we team up with a law firm very, very collaboratively, looking at the different structures. We come up with structures, they come up with structures, but bounce ideas off each other. And these structures could be pretty, you know, tax technical. So I think them having another firm listen to their thoughts and also sharing our thoughts and our collective thoughts, I think makes the overall engagement even a better engagement. The client gets more value out of it, because we work very, very closely with these law firms. The big law firms in this space, they do this a lot. We do this a lot as well. So there's a lot of, I'll say, synergies that are obtained by us working together.
And we often, Pat, find ourselves in a situation where we're both accounting firm, KPMG in this case, and the law firm are kind of questioning each other and pushing each other on the technical issues, which really hones the analysis and the arguments that we then need to have in place when we sometimes, for example, go into the IRS together for a private letter ruling. And by the point we do that and we have the negotiations with the IRS, we've had sufficient debate among ourselves that we're very crisp on the issues and really have the best way to put forward the taxpayers' objectives.
That's fantastic. Well, look, all three, I really appreciate the time. There's a lot we put into a quick podcast, but this has been wonderful. So thank you again for joining us. And for everyone listening, thank you for listening. And we look forward to you here in our next podcast here on Talking Asset Management with KPMG. Take care and thank you.